Today's private equity firms need the right insight to help them succeed in a rapidly evolving industry. With more than 100 years of experience, BDO helps private equity firms create value at every stage of the investment lifecycle. Visit BDO's website to learn more about our private equity practice and how we can support you in achieving your investment goals. Hello, and welcome to BDO's Private Equity Perspectives podcast, where we explore the trends impacting private equity today. I'm Todd Kinney, National Relationship Director in BDO's Private Equity Practice. Today, we're lucky to be joined by Jason Frank, President and Chief Compliance Officer at BDO Capital Advisors, and Jamie Austin, who is the Global Private Equity Leader and Partner at BDO UK. In today's episode, Jamie and Jason will share their observations around how macroeconomic factors are playing into deal making, and why firms are leaning into certain types of investments instead of others right now. In our next episode, we're going to dig into the current deal making landscape, explore the strategies firms are deploying for value creation and growth, and as always, look ahead to what's to come and how private equity might react. Across these two episodes, we will be discussing some of the findings revealed in BDO's annual private equity survey, which was just released. If you find the discussion compelling, head over to our PE page on BDO.com to download the rest of the findings and our analysis. Just a quick reminder, as always, to our listeners that the remarks and opinions of our guests do not necessarily represent BDO's views. So with that out of the way, Jason, why don't you start us off here? As the leader of BDO's capital advisory practice, perhaps you can share a bit about your role and where your current priorities lie.
Thanks, Todd and Jamie. Look forward to a great discussion. My name is Jason Frank. I am president of BDO Capital Advisors. We are the U.S. investment banking subsidiary of BDO USA. We offer various services to our clients, being sell-side M&A, where we advise clients seeking a sale to a strategic or financial buyer, working a lot with private equity firms. We work with buy-side M&A engagements where we advise clients seeking to acquire other companies. We do various forms of capital raising, both debt and equity, where we advise clients seeking to raise private capital to fund growth or liquidity objectives. We offer strategic advisory services where we advise clients on shareholder value strategies, including strategic alternative reviews, liquidity options, as well as fairness and solvency opinions. And lastly, we offer ESOP advisory, where we advise clients seeking to establish or unwind ESOPs. We are headquartered in the United States. Our clients usually represent founder or family-owned businesses. A lot of times they're sponsor-backed businesses as well. We are industry agnostic, meaning we have credentials, experience, as well as tombstones in every industry sector. Our typical client size or engagement size is roughly 50 to 500 million of enterprise value. And in the United States, our practice really is a combination of both regional and national or global bulge bracket investment banks. We have significant experience where our senior bankers all have north of 20 years of M&A experience. And these bankers are staffed on our engagements. We don't sell with our A team and then backfill with our C team. All of our staff are A team. We focus on all of the industries, as I mentioned, instead of being industry specific. We do have leverage our global BDO colleagues. So we offer significant cross-border resources and experience and activities, both from buyers and sellers. Lastly, we do not face independence issues or conflicts that a lot of the large global bulge bracket firms have with leveraging their balance sheet. And I am relatively new to our practice, started at the beginning of the year with the main focus and support by the executive team of BDO to grow our practice to be a much more representative of the size and scale of BDO. And I'm glad to be here and look forward to offering a perspective in the private equity market.
All right, Jason, great to have you on the podcast. And everyone at BDO is excited to have you at the helm of BDO Capital. So a welcome to you, my friend. Jamie, I'll pass it over to you now. As head of global private equity at BDO UK, can you tell us about your role and some of your current focus areas?
Sure. In a nutshell, Todd, I get to work with fabulous people like you and Jason. I'm a little bit longer tenure than Jason. I've been at BDO for 17 years, and by trade, I am an investment banker. So I've done a lot of deals in my time, but my current iteration of my role is to lead our global private equity strategy. And it's probably worthwhile starting off with a little bit of the architecture of BDO, because it is a global business. We are in 166 different countries, and that's not a dissimilar number to the number of countries that participate in the Olympic Games. And we have over a million clients across the world, and we offer so much to private equity houses and their portcos, especially those with international footprints and those with those aspirations. We have great platform for both. And whenever I go in the BDO world, I find like-minded people. We are skillful and dedicated and invariably champions of that really interesting middle market. Therefore, our corporate clients are always asking us, well, how can you help fund our futures? And consequently, we do help a huge number of companies take their first steps into private equity and working with others that are looking to accelerate their growth and build their resilience. So my role, in a nutshell, is to knit all of that together so that we present the best of ourselves to funds, to portcos, investors, and the PE curious, i.e. those businesses looking for funding. It's simple. And I'm leaning, as I said, into the best of what BDO provides to create a joined up service to this exciting marketplace. And it's a real privilege to be on this podcast with you today, Jason and Todd.
Well, Jamie, it's a pleasure to have you. And I know I've had the luxury of marketing with you when you come through New York City and we meet a bunch of our PE clients. So again, thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
So I think you're both going to provide some interesting perspectives to this discussion. So let's jump into it. The private equity landscape has experienced significant shifts over the past year. In fact, our survey found that post-Liberation Day, 31% of respondents cited the state of the stock market and public equity valuations as a top factor influencing deal making, making it the top-cited answer. In contrast, just 18% cited tariffs as their top influencer, putting tariffs in fourth place. So I'm curious to hear what you guys are seeing in the current market, particularly regarding macroeconomic factors like tariffs and their impact on deal making. I guess, Jamie, why don't you start us off on this one?
Yeah, well, Todd, thank you. It is a complicated picture. There's certainly uncertainty in the air. We went from a sort of a reasonable recovery of platform investments and exits as we ran through H2 24 and into Q1 25. And then we've had a large dollop of uncertainty as President Trump got down to the serious business of governing. And of course, there are a number of highly distracting overseas issues to deal with. And I think that investors were a little bit caught on the hop. So we did have a pause for breath. But the good news is what we're seeing now is things getting back on track as investors assimilate the rhythm of the new administration and what is going on in macroeconomic world. And you can see from the excellent BDO USA survey, the move to distress is definitely happening. Cash is king, more equity funding. So we are seeing movement. And of course, global capital is a powerful thing. And I have great confidence in it. It's flexible, it's innovative, and it's not sentimental. And when markets are moving and when there is change in the air, opportunities pop up. And private equity is quick to move in. And the wheels are turning once again. We peaked at about 6.6 years being the median age of a portco. And that will steadily come down as we see more deals. Equally, we're seeing the global levels of dry powder dropping back to 2022 levels. Some of it is still quite old, though, putting some pressure on the funds. I think we'll see more platform investments and more exits in this half and rolling into 2026, relieving some of the pressure on that aging dry powder. Interestingly, though, guys, in Europe, it's been slightly less affected, and the recovery has generated more momentum. In fact, If I look at my own practice, in the United Kingdom, we just turned in some exceptional results from the M&A team for the last 12 months. Recent M&A stats show that deal making in Europe is 5% higher than the average for the last 5 years. So things are starting to look up, but we're not out of the woods, I would say. But I'm pretty optimistic about what's coming next.
Yeah, I appreciate all that. I like the back on track comment, Jamie. I'm starting to see that across our clients as well. Yeah. So do appreciate that. So Jason, what are your thoughts on the same question? What are you seeing in the current market environment, particularly regarding some of these influential macroeconomic factors and their impact on deal making?
Yeah, at a high level, I kind of agree with the glass half full approach. We're all optimistic and hopeful. But look, private equity began the year still enjoying the momentum that 2024 showed. January, everybody expected a really strong year in deal making. Credit markets were open. Debt was cheaper. Inflation appeared to be under control. Interest rates were trending down. And the Fed in the U.S. was, you know, not the enemy as it has been over the last several decades. People didn't really even focus on the Fed, which was kind of nice. And everybody was optimistic. The mood was great. Everybody expected great things, which kind of started the beginning of the year. Global buyout count was high in Q1, the way it started. And it was kind of following the upward trend that we were experiencing in 24. Deal value was at the highest since the second quarter in 22, really boosted by some larger transactions were coming back, which was very positive. Exits as well from private equity were pushed higher in Q1, really by a surge in sales to private equity directly to strategic buyers. A little bit IPO, but strategic buyers were really driving that. But as we all know, that upbeat start kind of came to a quick end during Liberation Day. The uncertainty that tariffs really created, which was really starting to swirl in February, was, you know, really amplified when Liberation Day happened in the beginning of April, and it really triggered a lot of volatility across all capital markets around the globe, which directly had an effect on M&A transactions. Throughout Q2, the value of deals ended up being 24% below monthly average for, you know, that was experienced in Q1, and deal count was down as well by large amounts. The slowdown of deals, actually, it was also mirrored on the exit side in Q2. The most immediate impact was seen in IPOs, which were already subdued, but they essentially shut down in the second quarter. Either offerings were postponed or canceled, really, because the turmoil. So the administration in the U.S. is really driving a lot of the activity across the globe. It has significant effects directly in the U.S., but is having indirect effects country by country, depending on the tariff and trade deals that are going on and negotiations. I believe with Jamie and the glass half full, optimistic that Q3 and Q4 are going to be a little bit more free flowing in terms of deal activity, because people are getting used to the rhythm, as Jamie put it, of what's going on in the U.S. administration. But as the past has shown us, the potential chaos that certain policies can create have the ability to literally create paralysis across economies, across capital markets, across deal making. So I think everybody's still on edge. Everyone's optimistic, but still on edge.
Sounds about right. Well, I appreciate all that insight and some interesting stats there as well. So thanks, Jason.
As deal making conditions evolve, private equity leaders need research-backed perspectives to guide their strategy. If you're enjoying this episode, then please check out BDO's Private Equity Survey to learn how firms are driving value creation to prepare for an M&A surge and a whole lot more. Visit the BDO 2025 PE Survey to understand how PE firms are adapting to the macro environment and how BDO can support your investment goals.
Let's switch gears slightly now. BDO's 2025 PE survey found that new platform acquisitions are a top choice for how firms plan to deploy dry powder in the next year, with 41% selecting it. Investing in distressed businesses was the second most popular choice at 27%. So curious to get both of your thoughts on that. Additionally, amid the volatility, we're seeing many PE firms rethinking their timeline expectations for deal activity. So, Jason, I'm going to have you weigh in here first. How are you advising clients who are balancing the pressure to make deals with the need for caution in an uncertain environment?
So it's a great question. From the investment banking perspective, how we are, our client base, as I said earlier, is founder and family-owned businesses, usually the first institutional capital in or first time working with in the capital markets and the deal environment. So this is new to them. If we're representing them on the sell side, if they are not forced to sell, we are trying to express a word of caution to them. If they're not affected by tariffs, if they're not affected by the big, beautiful bill that was just recently passed, where Medicare, Medicaid, healthcare is becoming more of an issue or the hot topic, we are telling them to sell and carry out their objectives, but with caution. The buyer market, be it strategic or financial buyers, are having a lot of difficulties right now. That is, private equity markets is obviously being affected by the stress of trying to find exits, the pressure to distribute funds to their LPs. They're trying to find fresh sources of capital and then additional times to put it to work. What we have found is that there's a lot of A credit type of assets that are out there. They're still selling. The Bs and Cs that historically in good markets do not have any issues of finding potential buyers, those are having significant issues. Personally, we're explaining to our clients or our prospects not to move forward if that's the case. Wait for the markets to get better. Wait for their operations and their financial performance and strategic guidance to become better. The A type assets in certain industries are definitely still trading and still trading for very high multiples. But it's a difficult market out there because a lot of private equity funds are having trouble getting investment opportunities through investment committee. Debt, while there's still a significant amount of private debt out there, not every debt provider is the right type of provider in terms of the way the debt facility is being crafted, the way the various metrics and KPIs need to be followed, let alone being just a good partner. So we are trying to advise clients to be as diligent and as ready for a sale process as possible. And if they are not forced to sell, we want to help them achieve their objectives. But if they're not forced, don't just take an offer just because it's an offer. We're telling them, make sure it's the right offer for them.
All right. Lots of good insight there, Jason. Thank you. So, Jamie, over to you. What are you seeing in terms of how firms plan to deploy their capital? And what's your advice to clients who are balancing the pressure to make deals with the need for caution in this uncertain environment?
Thanks, Todd. And there's a sort of almost flip side to what Jason was talking about. But I'd definitely start by looking at oneself as a fund. Where you're particularly strong, look at your track record. What industries or situations have you done extremely well in? It's been the case for a number of years, but you really, even more so in this market, need to pick out those things that you really want and gain conviction as quickly as possible and go for it. I think that means getting earlier in the cycle, perhaps. If you cannot gain conviction in something, don't hang around the hoop, move on, move quickly. I would say that you need to absolutely make sure you know what you're buying into if you are a fund. And I guess this translates into undertaking more and earlier and more effective due diligence before investing. And as Jason was alluding to there, the A part of the market, the pricing is still very high in those go-to sectors, tech being the sort of top of the top, really. And it's being pushed higher and higher. Perhaps it's now right to look beyond tech and beyond the A's to look into the B's and C's to see where the bargains might exist, minding obviously what Jason was saying as often an advisor to the vendors. And what we're actually seeing in the UK, perhaps, where we're seeing a little broader deal waterfront breaking out. And we're seeing a resurgence in other sectors such as travel. Industrials, I think, is going to be also start to get quite warm. So my advice to funds is get in quick, move now. And I guess maybe this is obvious, but the continuation fund is another thing to think about if you certainly need to return capital to LPs. It's certainly taking off in Europe with some really noticeable names and some notable amounts of money being raised. So I think there are lots of things, and I guess the fundamentals still hold as they ever have. But I think, so I hope you don't mind me saying this, the South African rugby team plan B is to do plan A harder. So here it's about plan A, for just do it harder, really gain conviction in the areas that you know you are strong at, and go for it, move early, move fast.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you sharing your perspective. It's always good to zoom out and hear a global point of view. So unfortunately, guys, we've already come to the last question for this part of the episode, but this is a topic I'm eager to discuss with both of you. There's been a lot of discussion recently about firms looking at companies that are new to outside investment. So from your perspectives, what makes these first-time investments particularly attractive in the current climate? Jamie, why don't you kick us off on this one?
I mean, I'm a great admirer for how private equity works. You know, it assesses a business and its marketplace from a series of different angles. It picks 4 to 5 priorities, and it uses leverage and timeframes to sort of create a burning platform from which to drive transformation at pace. And of course, private equity brings this sort of vast lived experience and the skills of operating partners, money, it's a useful thing, and great networks to help. So I guess the simple answer to your question, Todd, is invariably there are a greater number of value creation opportunities with businesses that haven't experienced that level of focus before. So I think that is why first timers are particularly attractive. They've always been attractive, but today I think we're going to see even greater attraction, which is one of the areas that, of course, BDO excels at, because we have so many middle market corporate clients looking to go on journeys.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Jamie. And certainly when it comes to value creation strategies, we're going to get into more of that in part two of this episode. So, Jason, what do you think makes these first-time investments particularly appealing in the current climate?
Perfect question for BDO Capital Advisors, because we do specialize in and focus on founder and family-owned businesses, which is usually, you know, the first institutional capital in looking for the services that we offer. From the investment perspective, these are organizations that are, I guess, fertile in terms of for private equity funds to extract their internal rates of return and get their investment. Private equity funds and the industry is just so competitive these days that financial engineering, which historically was producing the necessary returns that they required, that is out the door now because of competition. True successful private equity firms today and into the future need to create value. And they need to create value from operational, strategic, and execution of their value thesis for their investment portfolio companies, be it platform or add-ons. And these smaller companies that are first institutional capital in are kind of like clean slates for them, where they can offer those types of value creation strategies for those types of companies and truly get the returns that they're looking for. In terms of value creation in those strategies, it's both top line as well as their cost structure. Top line could be geographic growth. It could be vertical or horizontal growth. It could be new products. It could be adding or additional acquisitions to facilitate the growth for those various strategies as well. But on the cost side, it's just as important. If they've looked at cost programs and done cost savings at their portfolio companies, they should do it again, because there's various new tools and various new technologies like generative AI that is further adding to productivity and cost savings that weren't even possible a few quarters ago. So operating leverage will be increasingly important. And these types of companies are perfect to be able to implement these types of strategies.
All right. Well, I appreciate the insight. So we're going to press pause now on the conversation and pick it up in a couple of weeks, where we'll discuss additional findings from the BDO Private Equity Survey and also explore how we might see some of that play out in the coming months. Next time, we'll also zoom in on more buyer competition, value creation strategies, and driving growth despite the slow exit landscape. So Jason and Jamie, thank you so much for taking time to join us on the podcast today. I'm certainly looking forward to hearing more from both of you on part two. To our listeners, thanks so much for tuning in. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, this has been BDO's Private Equity Perspectives.
The views presented by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of their respective firms.